Welcome to Season 4 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are speaking to some of the most innovative minds in the world of sports nutrition. We will be discussing everything from research, practice, and performance to give you an inside look into the exciting world of combat sports performance. Today, my guest is Dr. Duncan French. Duncan is the Vice President of Performance at the UFC Performance Institute in Las Vegas. He has over 20 years of experience working with elite professional and Olympic athletes. Prior to joining the UFC, Duncan was the Director of Performance Sciences for the University of Notre Dame Athletics Department. Before residing in the US, he was a technical lead for strength and conditioning at the English Institute of Sport. He has worked 3 full Olympic cycles and has been the national lead for strength and conditioning to both Great Britain basketball and Taekwondo. Duncan has authored or co-authored over 60 peer-reviewed scientific manuscripts and 7 book chapters. He was the chairman of the UKSCA from 2011 to 13 and received an honorary fellowship in 2014 for his services to the strength and conditioning industry. When it comes to the discussion of high performance, there is no better man than the one who is leading the UFC Performance Institute from the front. This is a great episode packed with amazing insight, so let's get to it. All right, green light means we are live, so back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. So today, I am joined by the one and only Duncan French, Vice President of Performance at the UFCPI. Duncan, I want to ask you, first and foremost, can you explain what is meant by Vice President of Performance at the UFCPI?
Oh, man, who knows? If you can tell me, Jordy, that'd be great. And every day, it's like a different hat I have to wear. So, you know, I'm still trying to figure that out myself, I think, a little bit. But, no, listen, man, I appreciate the introduction. Thanks so much. I'm VP of Performance here at the Performance Institute. I'm kind of direct and manage all the athlete interface with our kind of performance services that we have here at the PI. You know, also our facility out in Shanghai, China, kind of reports up into myself from a strategic perspective in terms of, you know, service delivery, managing the interface and the interactions of the fighters. And I manage the team here, work with the team to provide, you know, the best level of service we can give the roster. So it's good times.
Yeah, keep you busy, that's for sure. Let's take a few steps back though, Duncan. Let's go through how you ended up at this sport. Like, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how did you end up at the UFC?
Yeah, it's been a blast, man. I mean, it's been a fair ride, and I've been, you know, some great opportunities and been in some privileged positions. So I look back on my career fondly to date, and I'm humbled by you know, some of the chances and the opportunities I've been given. But you know, I've got a PhD in exercise physiology from the University of Connecticut here in the US. Back in 2004, I graduated my PhD. So, you know, my background is in, you know, exercise science, physiology. My PhD was largely in kind of endocrinology, neuroendocrinology, so looking at muscle function, hormonal status, and you know, athletic performance with a, you know, resistance training as an external stressor. So that's kind of how I really kind of took off in my interest around athletic performance and the role of strength training and power development and these types of aspects. And then while I was at Connecticut, I also got into kind of coaching, working in the athletics department, you know, working as a strength coach. We were a big basketball school there, you know, 3-time national champions of women's basketball and men's and women's champions in 2004. But that really set me on a course of really kind of enjoying engaging coaching as well. So I had this kind of parallel of being a scientist or a sports scientist and also being a strength coach, you know, and I kind of chose the route of being a strength coach primarily. I went back to the UK, dropped into the Olympic system, you know, prepped the England basketball teams for the Commie Games in Australia in 2016, it was then. But not 2016, what we're talking about, it was before that, 2008, I think. But 2006, because that was the Olympics. But yeah, I worked through the Olympic system, where I worked primarily with boxing initially through the Beijing Olympic cycle. So I worked in a multi-sport English Institute of Sport, but worked heavily with kind of the boxers in the northeast of the UK. Picked up some combat experience then, moved into basketball, and then kind of moved into Taekwondo for the Rio cycle. little period of time in the English Institute there. So I had some kind of caliber and pedigree working with combat fighters, not necessarily MMA, like my role right now, but combat culture and knowing, you know, what combat fighters have to go through in their preparations was a key kind of recruitment piece, I guess, for my employees here at the UFC. And then I've also managed, you know, performance systems at the English Institute of Sport, and then more recently at University of Notre Dame here in the US. So it's been a ride, but I think the amalgamation of, you know, my experience working with fighters and then, you know, managing performance services as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think let's talk about Duncan and let's go through how the UFC PI came to be, because I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast is very familiar with the UFC PI. I've had a lot of your staff on as guests and very high level practitioners in their area. They're all excelling in their area, and you've kind of got this team around you that I would say is a high performance based team, all centered around in the Performance Institute. Before we start talking about the team, how did the UFC PI come to be?
Yeah, I mean, so I was actually the first hire for the PI. You know, when I came for my interview, it was a construction site. It was, you know, rubble and just going up, which is an interesting experience. But, you know, two of my colleagues, you know, Forrest Griffin, who everyone knows, and James Kimball, who's the VP of operations as well, they were involved in the project prior to my arrival. And, you know, it kind of largely came around. Back in 2014, there was kind of the UFC as a company kind of looked at its financial projections, and there was kind of an anomaly between the projections and what they ended up at the end of the year with. And they were trying to figure out what that was and why that kind of difference had happened. And then, you know, in interrogating why, it came down to things like missed weights and athletes dropping off fight cards through injuries, you know, championship fights no longer being championship fights because of a weight issue. So, you know, things that you could potentially suggest are somewhat preventable. So the UFC looked at that and said, you know, we need to manage our assets better, i.e. the fighters. And if we can manage and protect and look after our asset, then the return on the asset in the fights is going to be preferentially more, you know, more beneficial. So that's how the kind of concept of the Performance Institute came around, was a infrastructure for the UFC roster to support or minimize the risk of missed, you know, of fights dropping off, which is missed revenue, right? And there's a financial dollar amount attached to every fight that we lose. So, you know, that's what the Performance Institute was kind of pollinated by, this desire to provide an infrastructure for fighters to, you know, to support the fighters in whatever they're doing, primarily around injury management, physical performance and preparation, obviously the nutrition piece, which you're heavily involved with, and what that means to making weight and these types of scenarios that are, as I say, somewhat preventable. We're never going to prevent injury, but minimizing fight preparation and minimizing injuries during fight preparation and maximizing the likelihood that they're going to make the fight is a big deal to what we do. So that's kind of where it was pollinated from.
Yeah, and absolutely. And like I alluded to before, you guys do have this superstar team that is around you. How did you guys go about getting everyone there? I know I've spoken to Bo and I've spoken to Clint and Heather and got them on. And how did you guys go about getting all these guys together? Did you just look at the bell curve and just say, I want the top 0.1%, or how did it work?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, listen, number one, again, like myself, I think that there has to be a certain amount of credibility, right? So, you know, Clint's the former, you know, two-time All-American NCAA wrestler. You know, Bo's worked with the USA Greco-Roman and freestyle wrestling teams and some of the taekwondo fighters. Myself, you know, I'm boxing and taekwondo. Heather's worked at the Olympic Center. So, you know, the staff we recruited, number one, had to understand what we were trying to do. You know, they've got to buy into the philosophy and the concept and engage in a mission of what we want the Performance Institute to achieve. So it was a little bit abstract at that, you know, in those early, you know, in our early life in the first year, because, you know, we're not like a traditional professional team where, you know, the players or the fighters are always in front of you. You know, this is quite a transient operation we've got here. So we needed people that would understand the culture, that have really got a desire to change and elevate, you know, combat sport and see combat sport as an exciting opportunity to demonstrate their skills. But to do that in the nuance of combat and mixed martial arts and the UFC in particular, you know, which is, it's different to a rugby player or to a soccer player or to an American football player or basketball player, right? We're dealing with a very specific clientele. And then we wanted people that, you know, fit into our philosophy of the way we go about our work, our mantra of interdisciplinary services. You know, that's critical to what we do, and that's essentially, you know, my role is to manage and make that happen. And I think all of the guys that we recruited truly wanted to operate and believe that that is the best approach and the best methodology. So, you know, between understanding combat culture and fighting and being interested in working in a particular system in a particular way, and then having just a, you know, an enterprise mentality, you know, we came from nothing, and, you know, we're only 3 years into this thing right now. So, you know, someone like Heather Linden has been, you know, she's been to 7 Olympic Games, I think, you know. Clint's a former Olympic reserve, you know, in wrestling, and he's achieved high things. But, you know, all these people have done great in their own particular careers. So, you know, we wanted them to come and engage in a enterprise spirit and try something new and be innovative and create a new revolution, a new approach via the Performance Institute. So we're excited that we've got, you know, a superstar startup team on our staff, and yeah, I think every one of them is a humble individual and is certainly trying to maximize each athlete's potential that they interact with. So it's going well.
When I first came out to the UFC PI, I remember walking around and thinking, wow, this is really what I would consider a high performance environment for MMA athletes. How do you define, with all your background and all your experience and everything you've done in your career up to this point, how do you define what high performance is?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Jordy. I wish you'd have given that 2 days so I could be also prepared. I mean, listen, for me, it's about flexibility in a system. And the flexibility of our system has to align to the bespoke custom requirements of every athlete that walks through the door. And I think that's what, again, what we pride ourselves on. I think when you're a truly high-functioning, high system, it's not a rigid approach. It's not a you come through the door and you drop into the Performance Institute system. The system flexes to meet your requirements. You know, you can't look at a Francis Ngannou the same way as you look at a Joseph Benavidez. I mean, this is two completely different bodies, two different legacies of training history. And, you know, and those are the things that, you know, physiology, psychology, all these things that we've got to kind of target and address. So I think that's what I look at as a true high performing system is there's a fluidity and a flexibility to it. And that flexibility aligns with the very, very specific needs of each coach or each athlete and the team that they're working in. And we align with the athletes. And I think, you know, that's what I think creates the best experience for the fighters, you know, because they have a sense of personalization to what they experience when they're here. They feel it is aligned and intentional to their own personal needs. And that's a very key aspect to what we try to do. Of course, you know, we want, as you've already contested to, we want very high level practitioners of staff to deliver technical expertise in all the different vertical domains that we have. But as a holistic approach, a high performance system meets the requirements of the client at the level that they need it. And I think that's what we pride ourselves on.
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on it a little bit before when you were talking about your own experience, how you were both the scientist and you went through your PhD and you went through all of that, but you're both on the ground as a coach and doing that. How important do you find it is to kind of merge the gap and kind of close that gap between the knowledge and then the practice?
Well, I mean, it's credibility, right? It's credibility, and it's also delivering content or technical knowledge, expert knowledge, in a digestible fashion. So, you know, the athlete, the population of athletes that we're working with, number one, have to believe what you're saying. And if I've only ever worked with golfers, you know, for a 23-year experience with golfers at the highest level, and then I come and try to work with an MMA fighter, they're going to look at me and they're going to laugh in my face, right? So, you know, there needs to be a certain amount of credibility. And I think I come back to combat culture. You know, you've got to understand what fighters experience day to day on the mats, in the ring, in the octagon, whatever it may be, so that you can create a connection and a respect, you know, more than anything. It's a trust piece. This guy understands what I'm trying to do. He's not taking that mumbo jumbo from golf and he's trying to bring it to, you know, UFC. So there's a certain amount of that. And then, yeah, it's about, you know, how you deliver messages at the level that they are easily digested. Now, yeah, that pathway between high level science, and we pride ourselves on using basic science and first principles of physiology, biology, psychology, etc. But we've got to get them into bite-sized pieces to an athlete that has to understand it and accept it. So, you know, that spectrum, that pathway between just talking high science with our staff and getting it into a digestible fashion for athletes to understand is a skill in itself. But you have to do that. That's the hard yards, because if you just talk in scientific riddles, it's not going to be consumed by an athlete population that might not necessarily be ready for that type of narrative and that kind of conversation, be not kind of educated on a maturity perspective in terms of this is the language we use. You know, that there's a legacy to building out a nomenclature and a language within a sport. You know, if you talk to an AFL footy player or a soccer player in the English Premier League, they'll talk about GPS and heart rate monitors, but because it's part of their kit, their uniform, they put it on, it's now embedded into their, you know, tradition of what they do. We're still creating those types of narratives in MMA. Like, what's the language we use? Are we talking about an anaerobic breakpoint? Are we talking about, you know, a mobility end range of and how that's important for jits? You know, there's language that we need to change. So we've got to do the hard work. And again, it comes back to your previous question, is we've got to flex our approach to meet the client, i.e. the athlete and the coach, at their level of understanding. And that's a skill that we continue to try and develop and grow our expertise at as well.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting point, and it's like that big golden question of how do you define performance in MMA, because it's not as well as established as, say, your Aussie Rules footy or your soccer or your rugby or things like that that have been around for years. In the 3 years since the UFCPI has been around, how do you feel that you guys have contributed to that in defining, okay, this is performance when it comes to mixed martial arts?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'll say is that we're not arrogant enough to say that it wasn't happening without us, right? So, you know, the fighting and you know, prize fighting and athletes competing in the UFC at the top level has happened long before the PI came on the scene, right? And, you know, they were doing just fine without us. And that will happen long after we've gone, right? But I think, you know, I think what the Performance Institute brings to the table is a support structure. We've got the opportunity to provide evidence and efficacy to methodology. We've got the opportunity to demonstrate the value of method A versus method B. We've got the ability to take the whole roster that we essentially work with and create pooled information, pooled data sets, and say, all right, here is an interpretation of what the UFC fighter at 145 or 185 looks like. No one else can do that because they don't have access to the same insights that we have. So we see that as a real responsibility of ours. And that's a lot of our messaging, you know, on a day-to-day basis when we're working with teams and fighters, but also to the greater community, is to demonstrate where does a UFC fighter sit at physically, physiologically, neurologically, all these different types of things. So we see our role as very much being a support infrastructure to plug the gaps of what is missing in an athlete's portfolio. You know, some athletes, let's take Brown Ortega, right? He's always an example. He's worked most of his life in his garage, in his buddy's garage, right? And he was, you know, not so long ago, fighting Max Holloway for the world title. Mm-hmm. But you've then got big gyms like ATT or City Kickboxing or wherever it may be, where they've got their own personnel, their own staff, and they've got 30 UFC fighters under that roof, you know. So they're a pretty well built infrastructure themselves. So we have everything in between. So we've got to support the ATTs and the you know, the AKAs and these big gyms that might not necessarily need as much kind of interface as some of the other, you know, other athletes that don't have the big support infrastructure around them. We're an a la carte service. We provide an infrastructure, whatever it may be, to maximize the potential of the fighter that comes through the door. And that's going to be different from, you know, our top guys through to number 600 on the roster, but we're going to flex our services to do that.
Yeah. And obviously, Duncan, you're talking about before how important these systems are and getting good systems in place to build this high performance culture. How did that go when you took those systems and then when you brought it to Shanghai and you guys developed the UFCPI in Shanghai? Was it a seamless process going over there, or were there certain things that you had to consider where, hey, this system here works in Las Vegas, but maybe we got to reconsider this for Shanghai? Or how did you guys go about that process?
Yeah, what a journey that was. I mean, it's really exciting to you know, we never thought 18 months into opening the doors of Las Vegas, we'd be opening up a 93,000 square foot facility in Shanghai, China, right, on the other side of the world. But that was the ride we're on. So, you know, I think what I would say, and hopefully if you ask all the staff, whether it's someone from Shanghai or someone from Vegas, we have core philosophies and core mentalities and approaches that we want to embed in the UFC Performance Institute way. You know, so when we talk about the PI, we look at it as an umbrella organization. It's not Vegas. It's Vegas, Shanghai, hopefully footprints elsewhere in the future in different territories around the world. And we'll call that the Performance Institute, right? It's just an extension of the Vegas HQ, but it's the same methodologies and philosophies that those guys over there align to. Now, there was some nuance to it because they've got an academy where we employ the coaches, the MMA, the wrestling coaches, the jits coaches, etc. We don't have that here in Vegas. So that was an additional bolt-on that we had to consider how we do that effectively. But again, that was a really great opportunity to hire the right people, to get the right minds in place, to get good coaches on board that buy into an integrated structure, including technical and tactical and non-technical tactical components. Because again, that's key. We don't just want to drop fighting coaches in there and then just dismiss our performance services. You know, we want them to embrace it and have an understanding of that. And our, you know, head coach Dean Amasinger and Richie Walsh, our assistant coach over there, do a great job of, you know, integrating with the team. So it's you know, it's philosophically it's very much aligned, with a few little bit differences, because we've got full-time academy that are, you know, in fight training every day there, and we're managing the whole system in Shanghai. So it's a little bit different.
And I guess a big theme that I've got, especially from talking to guys like Richie and Dean and Reed and then back in Vegas with Clint and Bo and all of them, is, and you alluded to before, the mass data collection that you guys are getting. And you're, like you said, you're getting this on the top most elite level fighters all around the world that are using the facility, collecting this data. I know this is a tough question to ask, but are you guys kind of putting together a profile of what you may think what a top MMA athlete should look like in terms of like a physiological sense? Are we getting close to being able to say, hey, for your anaerobic system, you need to be this, or your aerobic system, this, and with your strength and conditioning, you should be working on X, Y, and Z? Are we getting close to that point where we can start molding together this ideal athlete within the framework of a performance for an MMA athlete?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. The couple of answers to that. I mean, I think, you know, having looked at the data today, and listen, we've got 3 years worth of data right now, and the more data we get, the more power in the statistics there is, right? So the data set's only going to become more clearer and clearer. But it's in a sport that is hugely diverse, from stylistic fight background to, you know, people trying to get a jump on rule changes or techniques of, you know, you look at the massive growth in calf kicks right now in the UFC, right? That is one of the most dominant weapons in UFC right now. And before it was always the thigh kick, you know, the inside thigh kick. Now it's like the calf kick is a way better kick than the thigh kick, right? So you can see that the people are changing and figuring out how they can win the fight. So it's never static as a sport. It's really an innovative and creative sport where people are always trying to find new ways to win. So, you know, some of the information we get is good, but the sport is just always spinning. You know, it's always really, really creative what the fighters do to figure out how they can be successful. But to answer your question, yes. I mean, we are starting to really get power in our data where we can start to profile physiologically or physically certain characteristics and map them against weight class, against gender, or even more so that we see, and again, stylistic background. So if we know that you're coming in with a heavy wrestling background, we've probably got a pretty clear awareness of where you're going to be at and where your limitations are going to be. Same thing if you come in with a kickboxing background, you know. We've profiled all that. We've done the stats to look at, you know, the top 15 in each weight class, and really there's no difference physiologically between the top 15. So if we say, you know, our highest ranked fighters at this point in time, when we tested you, are you now different to, you know, number 16 down through the rest of your weight class? You don't really see that. It's a very heterogeneous sport. You don't see a homogeneity to just the top 15 guys. But what you do see is a real difference between stylistic characteristics and how that influences the physical and physicality of the sport and the way guys are going about competing. So I think that's where we can really start to shed some light and show some insight, because it's not like, you know, at the highest level in the UFC, you've got to be in top condition. You know, everyone's training hard. It's a given, but we can really start to map out weight class characteristics, gender characteristics, and stylistic characteristics to what people are coming to the fight with.
Hey guys, quick interruption to the podcast so I can give a quick plug to one of my OG partners in the fight game, TikTok Nutrition. If you follow the work I do outside of this podcast, you would know that TikTok Nutrition is my go-to meal prep partner. He has supported me and my athletes since I started TFD all those years ago. He's supported fighters of mine right from the regional scene up to my UFC world champs. He also looks after athletes in the NRL, Super Rugby, Ironman series, as well as countless gyms up and down the East Coast. But his meals aren't just for athletes. They're suited for office workers, nurses, and laborers. Basically, everyone can benefit from getting a bit of TikTok in their life. He's been nice enough to give all of my listeners a sneaky 10% off with code TFD10. Just apply that at checkout and you'll be good to go. All right, back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that always amazes me. And I always gain so much knowledge, especially for sitting down talking with Clint. And exactly that, when he brings out this data and he talks about, you know, these are the principles of this, but you have to take this on the individual basis. And it's phenomenal the amount of information that you guys have access to. Duncan, how are you guys getting that information out? And that's something that I've noticed is a big philosophy and a big component of the USCPI. It's not like other big organizations, say like the NFL or NHL, where I feel like everything's kept in and it's all a big secret. You guys are very open about letting that information out. What's the philosophy behind that?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you feel that, because again, you're part of our global combat community, Geordie, and you know, that's what we want to do. We don't want to hold on to this information and make it sacrosanct. We obviously don't make it personalized and identifiable. We're not telling you, you know, a particular world champion's performance test scores and then everyone can see where they're at. We're pooling information, so it's pretty much the identified and mean scores. But, you know, we want to elevate combat sport around the world. We want to change the narrative on a sport of MMA, which is only 25 years old professionally, and just elevate the standards. So we've got to do that in the favelas of Brazil, in China, in Australia, you know, in Europe, wherever it may be. We need to get people to start thinking about performance for MMA and the UFC, competing in the UFC in a different way. So, you know, we are purposely doing that. Now, listen, I would say that, you know, you probably saw our first journal that we released after a year of existence. We've got another one coming out this year, and hopefully just after some of this time, which is going to be twice as big as the first one. And the information is much more powerful and detailed, because now we've got the MMA piece bolted onto it as well from our Shanghai insights. So we're very excited about that. A lot of that is going to be on a new digital platform that we're going to be launching, which is going to be open access. We're going to be creating a much more a larger business strategy around our outreach and our interface. I think we've done a decent job in our first 2 to 3 years of, you know, nailing down what the fighters need when they come to Vegas or whether they're in Shanghai. But we really want to get this ripple effect out into the community now. And that's a priority for our mission here from 2020 through to 2023. So watch this space, hopefully, and more content to come, including, you know, we're planning on having, you know, webinars and much more interface and interaction with our staff, so you can get access to, you know, some of the intellectual property, those guys that you've already mentioned on our team. you know, presentations and topic discussions. We're looking at, you know, some kind of accreditation structure moving forward. So we're excited about where that's all moving.
Yeah, amazing. So I guess, Duncan, like in the 3 years that the UFCPI in Vegas has come, you would have seen rapid changes. And like you're talking about with those systems, they're very flexible and you would have obviously added to them and that high performance culture would have changed. What are some things that you have seen change over the 3 years since the UFCPI in terms of that performance culture and how the athletes respond to it and how they take it on board or how they engage with it?
Yeah, it was funny because just on, you know, UFC 250 this weekend just gone, you know, there was a moment in a fight and DC was commentating and he was talking and he was kind of laughing, and, you know, about some stuff. And, you know, Tony Martin, I think it was talking about his weight preparation. I've been working with Clint and he made the comment around, you know, in the first year when the PI opened, they were begging people to come through the doors. And now, 3 years into it, the fighters are reaching out and they're saying, hey, the best place to go and get this medical treatment or the best place to go and work on insights around your diet and your nutrition is via the PI. So, you know, that's kind of flipped the coin completely, which has been fantastic for us. You know, we've created that credibility, we've created that trust, that relationship with our roster. And yeah, it's about building the expertise and demonstrating the value of your service. We would have been naive to think, you know, we open the doors on day one and 600 fighters are all going to walk through and say, oh, this is the greatest thing going. You know, they've got to see how it's going to help them. Nobody gives a crap what you know until they know how they're going to help, how you're going to help them, right? So I think that's what we've tried to do. That's we've tried to align our services to the individual fighter's needs. We've demonstrated our value. And again, we continue to grow our service infrastructure, the different technical areas that we're offering. You know, we brought psychology on board now, which is a bit of a new vertical for us, which we didn't initially open up with. So that's another aspect to our you know, performance model. So yeah, we continue to grow. We've definitely got it figured out, but we've certainly got some great insights and we can give them powerful insights and powerful information for them and their coaches to then make better decisions and more informed decisions. And I think that's our role.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an absolutely phenomenal part of what you guys do is that data collection and the application to it. And I always talk about it, and you'll appreciate this because our home countries play a lot of rugby. And I always talk about like the rugby union player, say from the 80s, and then you compare it to a rugby union player in 2020 and they're chalk and cheese. And I credit a lot of that is the development of the sport science, but not only the development, but the application of that sport science. And like you alluded to, MMA at the biggest organization is only what, 25, 26 years old now or whatever it is. Duncan, how do you see you guys as the UFCPI contributing to that application and development and evolution of mixed martial arts through the sport science?
Yeah, I mean it's building habits, right? And it's changing historical approaches. You know, we know from basic science that there's certain ways, you know, muscle is developed, how it recovers, how you improve your nervous system. You know, basic science is telling us things that not necessarily specific to combat sport, but just physiology. So we've got to take those and we've got to push it into UFC and, you know, at sport of MMA. And I think that takes time. It's about, you know, guys making visits to the Performance Institute, seeing some of our exercise selections or the, you know, the technologies that we might be used to collecting data, and it creates, you know, an inquisitive mind thinking, hey, I can go back to Albuquerque or Australia or wherever it may be, and I can get that same kind of experience that I had at the Performance Institute, which hopefully was at the highest level, and I kind of replicate some of the methods. That's the ambition. You know, part of our mission statement is to accelerate the evolution of the sport of MMA. And that's what we're about. And that's a iterative process. There's a learning piece to that, you know, going you do a workout with Bo, or you spend, you know, 2 weeks with us working out. Are you working out differently or in a more efficient fashion? Are we considering your recovery and your regen more? You know, all these questions which are performance related aspects. It's just we're putting our twist on it, and then the fighters can go home and digest it and take what they want. You know, they don't have to take everything. They can just take particular facets of our philosophy and how we're trying to go about things. But I think you're right. I always liken it to, you know, the NHL, you know, the NHL ice hockey. Mm-hmm. Always used to have a big enforcer that would just be in the middle of the ice and would be the guy that was fighting, you know, so he'd just get in the fights, right? Well, at some point, some team figured out if we just get a lot of small, speedy guys on the ice, we're going to skate around this guy and he can't catch up with us. And now if you look at the NHL, it's a speed sport, right? It's not a, it's still physical, but it's built on speed. And I think that evolution of a sport is what we're looking to support and grow with the UFC is how can we look at the competition, the statistics of how people are winning the fight and the way and the methods that fights are being influenced and affected, and then interpret it into performance methodology, be that physical preparation or be that technical tactical preparation, which we can also now demonstrate our methods and our approaches with our Shanghai facility. So we've got efficacy, not just in performance services, but also in MMA skills and MMA teaching and tactical development of a performance curriculum as well, which, you know, those guys are leading on. So it's a really exciting time for us, but you're right. Our ambition is to continue to grow and evolve the sport and make it, you know, a unique, amazing experience for everyone that sees it.
Duncan, was there any unique challenges taking, say, the system that you have at Las Vegas, which is very much like a base where people would fly in? I know you guys have guys that train there regularly, but you get a lot of people flying in and visitors coming through, and then moving that to Shanghai, where you set up, say, the academy system, where you've got these athletes living basically on site or close by, where you can develop them over this time. How did you take all those philosophies and all those learnings from Vegas and then apply it to the academy system, where you could say, hey, we want to develop these athletes and apply this science? How did you go about making that happen?
Well, I mean, we've got a transient model here in Vegas, you know. So what we did was establish some really good structures and methods of, you know, performance services, I would call them, you know, in terms of intellectual knowledge around the types of injuries or the mechanisms of injuries that we see, really starting to understand fighter physiology from a, you know, metabolic, you know, management or metabolic injury or weight management or weight descent characteristics, or, you know, the performance aspects of testing and diagnostics around physical performance. We kind of got to a really good point around that. The MMA piece was something that is really hard for us to manage here in Vegas, because we work with 600 gyms, let's say. We've got 600 fighters that can potentially come and access our facility. Each one of those gyms has got very different ways of their techniques, that they teach techniques and tactics. You know, everyone talks about Mark Henry up in New Jersey and what he's doing in terms of his system. And then you've got, you know, Mike Brown at ATT and what they're doing. You've got, you know, Avi Mendez up with AK, you know, all these big level, top level coaches. They've got their own systems. We needed to bolt that type of aspect into what we do in Shanghai, China. But again, it needed to be agnostic. We couldn't just take someone from, you know, an ATT or an AKA and put it into Shanghai, because that no one would potentially want to go there, because, you know, it might be biased by a particular system. That's where we, you know, we scoured the world and we found Dean as our head coach, who's a great mind in MMA, you know, former UFC fighter, was on the Tough Show and, you know, a couple of fights, pro fights and things like that. But, you know, great, great mind, worked with Dan Hardy, worked with Bisping and some of those guys. And we could bring and bolt that piece into it. And his energy and his desire to work with Forrest Griffin on our, you know, technical, tactical side of things has been a, you know, really a huge part of what we do. So we're really proud about the Shanghai side of things, because we see that as almost the perfect model for the Performance Institute, i.e., we can influence medical, nutrition, S&C, sports science, and technical tactical, all the different aspects, and we can see if our systems are effective or not by the results of the fighters that are coming out of our academy. Now, that's the best proven model to say what we're doing works or doesn't work. Do you know what I mean? So I think, you know, we're all looking at the complete system in Shanghai, whereas in Vegas, we've got a complete performance system, but we're working with other coaches' mentalities, and we're trying to kind of fit that puzzle a little together. It's a little bit more challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm being mindful of time, Duncan. I don't want to take up too much of your time. So one of my last questions is that I want to ask you is, where do you see this going? How do you see the UFCPI developing in the next couple of years? Where do you see it? Do you guys plan on expanding this academy model around the world? Do you guys, you know, are you doing more things in-house in Vegas? What's on the cards for the future for the PI team?
Yeah, it's exciting, right? Just crystal ball gazing. I mean, I think if there's going to be, you know, there will be future PIs, I think they'll all adhere to the academy type model, you know, because what we've done is we've put an academy in Shanghai to try and develop talent in a very specific region that is related to the larger business strategy, i.e. we only have 11 Chinese fighters on our roster right now of a country of 1.5 billion people. So it's massively underrepresented. So we could pump, you know, more and more events into there and put American fighters on those events. But Chinese people want to support Chinese fighters. So we need to grow the talent pool. And that's what we've done with the academy in that Asian region. You know, if it's Europe or if it's Russia or, you know, South America or, you know, Africa, who knows? But I think the academy model will be our, you know, more footprints will come through like that in different territories, which is very exciting. And then, yeah, here in Vegas, it's just continuing to expand, like I say, our influence on a global community. So that part of that will be, you know, growing our digital community. We really want to build an interface that doesn't just have an outward facing kind of aspect to it, that we want to interact with, you know, those people that are seeking information, and we can all grow this thing together. You know, everyone like yourself, Jordy, you know, we see you as an entity in what we're trying to do. You know, you're supporting the messaging that we're trying to get out into the fight community to elevate the whole thing. So yeah, we want to do a lot more of that. We're certainly going to be building out our digital and our educational platforms, which we're very excited about. And then, yeah, continuing to grow our services and our knowledge of how we're going about the work here in Vegas and beyond is a day-to-day aspect for us. And like my role and my responsibility is to try and drive world's best practice. You know, so what is world's best? How do we define it? How do we measure ourselves against world best? How does Bo, Clint, Heather, you know, whoever, how do they compare against what we would consider the best people in the world, be it in soccer, rugby, or whatever? Are they bringing that to the sport of MMA? Because that's what we want to do. So that's a never-ending challenge, right? And that's what we're excited about.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. Duncan, I told you a lie. I said that was going to be the last question, but I got two quick questions for you. One, first one, UFC's kind of been leading the world of sports lately. You guys are the only ones that are really televising sport through the coronavirus period. What has been some unique challenges getting this whole operation up and running, getting the fighters to the events logistically and operationally? What are the challenges getting everything going and making this happen?
Oh man, yeah. I mean, listen, it's not just me and the guys in the port, you know, in the Performance Institute. It's the whole of the UFC company. But yeah, being involved in some of the planning and the, you know, what we're doing here has been fascinating for unprecedented times with COVID-19, right? So, you know, the first and foremost is, you know, the health and safety of the fighters, of the judges, of the, you know, the event staff, you know, everybody that's around it. So, you know, whether it's personal protective equipment, the frequency and the regularity with which we're conducting testing, and the investment that's gone into, you know, doing testing protocols for the staff and the fighters and the corners and, you know, all that type of stuff. Everything from, you know, changing air conditioning filters to medical grade filters to the frequency with which we're spraying down equipment and you know, what types of detergents are we using, to how are we delivering meals to athletes' doors, you know, because if they're in a particular protective bubble, we don't want them leaving their rooms too often, and going outside to, you know, takeaway or a restaurant and getting takeout, you know. So our nutrition team is obviously delivering food and working with our chef on a pretty extended basis now. So, you know, there's so many different aspects to trying to create many layers of protection to minimize infection and cross-contamination. And then, you know, traffic flow at the event itself is just a unique thing of how we look at warm-up rooms and social distancing and all that type of stuff. So it's been a really interesting period of preparation. Touch wood so far. We've had positive coronavirus tests on our very first, you know, event back. Jacare Souza and two of his cornermen tested positive, so that was a real pressure test for the whole, you know, standard operating procedures. But yeah, we continue to evolve it and adapt with a pretty dynamic situation, which we learn more from the CBC on a daily basis. So it's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And the final question I want to ask Dr. Duncan French is the question that's on everybody's lips who's an MMA fan. I think you know what I'm going to ask you is, one, what is Fight Island? And two, where is it?
Well, I mean, listen, Fight Island is happening. There'll be announcement here in the next meetings today. So watch out the media coming up very soon, next few days. Hopefully there'll be some announcements. I can't tell you where it is because that's above my pay grade and I want to keep my job. But yeah, it's going to be really exciting, a new aspect to, navigating around challenges. And that's what Dana White and the UFC does so well, is it looks at a challenge and it just tries to break through it and say, we're going to do this. We're going to find a solution. So it's, for our international fighters, right now we've got events on in North America. We've got, all the North American guys are kind of happy because the potential of earning a paycheck again is coming through. But our international fighters are looking and going, well, what about us? So that's what Fight Island will be. It'll be largely for the international guys. And again, it'll just create a new, unique kind of aspect to it, like the Enter the Dragon type stuff, flying up to Fight Island and get it on.
Yeah, absolutely. Very Mortal Kombat-y. But anyway, Dr. Duncan French, thanks so much. That's an amazing episode. So much great information. If the guys at home are listening to this, they want to follow your journey, they want to follow you on socials, say, I know you're a busy man, but say they wanted to shoot you an email and ask you any specific questions or anything like that, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I always try to, be open to people. I love talking about, what we're trying to do here and we're in it together, like I say. So, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, Dr_Duncan_French. You can drop me a DM on any of those. I'm on LinkedIn. So yeah, feel free to reach out and Facebook as well. So you should be able to find me on all the main, I tend to do the, Twitter and LinkedIn, Instagram a lot more. So yeah, they're the best ways to reach out to me.
All right, Duncan. Well, thanks so much, man. I know you're super busy, but thanks for taking the time and I really appreciate it. And no doubt I'll chat to you soon. Hopefully, maybe even see you on the island, wherever that may be in the world.
Yeah, bring your sun cream, Jordy.
Yeah. All right, mate. Thanks so much for that.
All right, buddy. See ya.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. There is no surprise as to why Duncan is recognized as a global leader when it comes to high performance in sport. He and his team are setting the standard for what high performance is in the sport of MMA and helping practitioners and researchers around the world while doing so. Be sure to follow him on his socials to stay up to date with his journey. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.